Welcome to Unpacking Peanuts, the podcast where three cartoonists take an in-depth look at
the greatest comic strip of all time, Peanuts by Charles M. Schulz.
Hey everybody, welcome to the show. It's a really, really exciting one for us here today. We have Charlie Brown and Lucy in the house. That is right. We have two of the voice actors who portrayed Charlie Brown and Lucy in some of your favorite specials, and I just can't wait for you guys to get to meet them. I'm Jimmy Gownley. You might know me from Amelia Rules or graphic novels like The Dumbest Idea Ever, Seven Good Reasons Not to Grow Up. Joining me, as always, are my pals, co-hosts, and fellow cartoonists. He's a playwright. He's a composer, both for the band Complicated People, as well as for this very podcast. He's the co-creator of the original comic book Price Guide, the original editor for Amelia Rules, and he is the cartoonist behind such great comic books as Strange Attractors, Tangled River, and A Gathering of Spells. It's Michael Cohen.
Hey there.
And he is the executive producer and writer of Mystery Science Theater 3000, a former vice president of Archie Comics, and the current creator of the Instagram strip Sweetest Beasts, Harold Buchholz.
Hello.
So, joining us today, we have Duncan Watson. Duncan was a voice actor from 1975 to 1977, playing the voice of Charlie Brown in Be My Valentine, Charlie Brown, You're a Good Sport, Charlie Brown, my personal favorite of this era, and the first feature-length Peanuts movie, Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown. And we also have Melanie Cohn with us. Melanie played Lucy in those very same specials. And recently, Duncan and Melanie have been attending comic book conventions together, so you can go out and meet Charlie Brown and Lucy, your own self. But today we're lucky enough to have them on the air with us. So I'm so happy to welcome to Unpacking Peanuts, Charlie Brown and Lucy, Duncan and Melanie. Thank you so much for coming and joining us on this podcast today.
Thank you for having us.
Happy to be here.
And not as happy as we are to have you. I'm so excited about this. I wish our listeners could listen right now, or could see rather right now. What I have my pumpkin hollowed out, and it is on my head as a protective device, because that's how excited I am. I don't want to cause any injuries to myself. So guys, take me back. What age are you when you first get the call that you're going to be a voice in one of the Peanuts shows?
Duncan?
Well, so I was living at the time in Tiburon, California. I was around 12 years old, maybe 11, 12 years old. And I was at recess and coming back from recess, heading towards my class. And I noticed there was a queue of people outside a classroom that was not my own classroom. And oddly enough, I just joined the line. I didn't even know why I was in the line. And as I worked my way up to the front of the line, the people, I sat down at the table, there was a little recording device there, and they asked what character I wanted to read for. And I said, I have no idea why I'm even here. I wanted to read for Charlie Brown. I said, well, that sounds good. I read two or three lines, and that was it, and went back to class. And then I heard back from them a couple of times, because they would call you back as they started narrowing down the field. About, I think, three or four times where it got narrowed down, and then finally got the call that the that they had selected me as the voice.
Now, did you get more, like, progressively more nervous once you knew what it was for?
No, not really, because, I was a kind of a go with the flow kind of a guy, you know, very much very California, just let it all happen. And so I didn't really fully comprehend what I was competing for, and and I was just using my regular voice. I wasn't, as a voice actor, it's a funny thing to basically be hired to use the voice. I'm inhabiting a character, but I'm using my own voice.
Right. No, Melanie, how about you?
Oh, I had a completely different experience. I was living about maybe 20 miles north of where Duncan was. We didn't know each other at the time. My sister voiced Lucy from 72 to 74. And as we have told you prior, they only use children for Peanuts. They still do. They only use children's voices for the Peanuts characters. So they don't tell you when you retire either. So my sister was voicing Lucy, and one day they called my parents for me, not for my sister. They wanted me to come in an audition in San Francisco. So I went in and I auditioned for Sally and Lucy. And they ended up saying that my voice was too deep for Sally and too high for Lucy, but they let me work into Lucy because they said my voice quality was similar to my sister's. And they didn't always do that. The Lucy voices always sounded different, but they wanted me to start out as Lucy. And I was about 10 or 11 years old.
Had they met you through your sister doing the recording, or had they just heard that she had a sister? Or?
I'm not sure. I don't remember. This was a long, long time ago. Mm-hmm. So I have bits and pieces of memory, as I think Duncan does as well. I don't remember, to be honest, if I had gone in with her when she recorded.
Melanie mentioned how they don't tell you when they retire you, and that's a kind way of saying that, you know, you when your voice changes or it no longer sounds like what they're looking for, you know, they obviously stop calling you. But I was in the middle of starting to tape It's Arbor Day, Charlie Brown, when clearly the onset of puberty started happening and my voice started cracking. And that was the last recording that I did.
Well, I have to say, as a fan, if you got to miss out on one, Arbor Day is probably a good place to start, right?
Pretty obscure.
And, no one's putting up the Arbor Day decorations and waiting for that. But that's Melanie, what was your sister's reaction? Like, was she like, hey, man?
I could so make something up right now.
Oh, you should. Absolutely.
So we were actually, my dad had us signed up at a casting agency in San Francisco. So that's probably how they knew about me. And, you know, I think that she probably had warning about being retired at a certain point. And, you know, a lot of people don't realize that girls' voices change too. It's just not as dramatic. So she probably had a heads up that she wouldn't be doing it forever. But she did get to do the Thanksgiving special, which is pretty major because, as you know, the three holiday specials, a Christmas, Halloween, and Thanksgiving are usually the most memorable for people.
Yeah. Now, of course, in my house, we have all of them and you have to watch all of them or it's just not a calendar year. But so, Melanie, you knew about Peanuts, obviously, because of your sister. Duncan, were you into Peanuts? Do you have any memory of Peanuts before that? Or did you just walk into the whole thing blind?
Well, no, I mean, of course I knew about Peanuts. I mean, I was an avid Sunday comic reader. Ah. And so I was always, you know, looking at the strip and, you know, appreciating at the time, you know, the 10 or 11 year old humor that was involved with it. But I've since, you know, become a fan only because, you know, I recognize that what makes Peanuts so universal is that, you know, it appeals to both children and adults can get a lot out of it as well.
Yeah. I mean, that's something we talk about pretty much every week on this show. And that is like this astounding genius that Schultz really had, that he was able to somehow talk to everybody without talking down to anybody. It's really right. Cool. As actors, how aware are you? Well, just take me through the process of what it would be like recording. Like, how aware are you of the different subtexts? Are they explaining that stuff to you? Are you together when you record? Just take me through like day one recording when both of you started.
Duncan, you have to tell the story about the sigh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so, I mean, you know, being that young and, you know, very literal, you know, so what they would do is they would bring us to a recording studio. I don't know about if Melanie went to the same studio, but I she must have, because I know that we were there at one point together. But there was a recording studio in San Francisco that we would travel to, and we would usually record our lines separately. But there were occasions where, like, there was a group sing in Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown, that we were all in the studio together singing something. And so what they would just put the script in front of you and they would, you know, ask you to read it. But this one particular script called for Charlie Brown to, you know, utter a sigh. And so I'd literally read the word sigh as part of the voice. And I just said sigh. And they're like, no, you need to sigh. I'm like, I am saying sigh. They're like, no, we need you to go. And okay, now I get it. So that was that happened often, you know, they would provide very minimal direction because they were really looking for, you know, sort of the in the moment authenticity of whatever was being read at the time. But sometimes, you know, they would have exclamation marks if needed, if they wanted to provide emphasis on something. And, you know, obviously when Charlie Brown goes charging after the football and goes flying through the air, that requires a little bit of a different voice.
Right, right. Oh, that's well, it's funny. One of our running bits on the podcast is I did not know how to pronounce Psy or what Psy meant when I was very, very little. So I thought he was just saying Sigga all the time. I thought, that is the weirdest thing. What on earth does Sigga mean?
Could I ask, when they were giving you the script, were you seeing it for the first time? So you were just reading it totally fresh the first time around, or had you had some chance to see it before you would have to read the lines?
Fresh.
Yeah.
Really? Wow. Was that challenge? That had to be stress inducing for a kid, I would think.
No. I started on the stage at 3 years old. So I really didn't have a problem reading English, reading all that grammar. It all came naturally to me. It was just one of those things that was easy for me from the time I started.
Well, what, is it more or less stressful to go in knowing something's being recorded and then, you know, going to be manipulated somehow without you, you know, animated and stuff, or going on a stage and doing something? What's the greater level of stress when you're a kid?
Going on stage.
Yeah, because the audience.
You don't get
right
a do-over.
All right.
Right. You don't get take two.
Right.
Well, I think what was helpful, too, is that they had little drawings with the caption. That they were asking you to read, so it wasn't just a written script that you were just sort of reading. They had some context with an actual rough drawing of what the character was doing.
Right,
that's cool. How many times did you have to give that line read normally? Did they give you lots of chances, or
as many as you needed? And also to expound on that, they did the animation after, so it was a rough drawing. So They matched the animation up with the voices. And back then, and you might know this, but your listeners might not realize that back then they did everything frame by frame. They drew everything. It took about 6 months to do a half hour special, which is really only 22 minutes of programming. So it was a very, very long process back then.
Yeah, it was incredible. I actually went down when I was doing some commercial work for my Peanuts character down in Los Angeles. I got a chance to go visit the studio where they were doing the cell animations. And just even a simple arm movement would require something like 20 or 30 drawings, you know, showing the arm in very slightly different positions. And, you know, obviously you can imagine, you know, the animation process and how many drawings it would take to create animation in that style. It's like, you know, one of those little flip books kind of thing. And it was an amazing process because every one of them had to be drawn and colored as well.
Right. Melanie, did you get to visit the space as well, or when you were working, or did you ever get to be in the place where they were making the show?
Actually, I did go down when my sister had to do something down in LA, but I did all my recording in San Francisco and I did some commercials as well. I don't have a memory of doing them in LA. I believe I did them in San Francisco as well.
Do you mind my asking, Jimmy, I'm sorry, I'm kind of taking this over, but it's triggering all these interesting questions for me. And one of them is, what was your feeling about the studio itself? Because we obviously have heard of some of the artists who worked there, and we know it was kind of dedicated to Peanuts for years. Was it very big? Was it like a big open space or a lot of little cubby holes, or what did it seem like to you?
My memory was a big room. And then I have a memory of a smaller room. Duncan had mentioned that we sang a song together for Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown. We were trying to figure out how we knew each other when we ran into each other afterwards. And I knew who Duncan was. And I couldn't remember now, this year, how we had met originally. And I remember a smaller room that we all went into to sing together. That's my memory. I don't know. Duncan, do you have a different memory?
Well, there was a place where when they were doing voice recordings, there would be, you know, several of the children that were there sort of in a waiting room. And then there's the engineer's booth that had the control panels, which I thought was amazingly cool. All these different things that you could slide and buttons you could press and knobs you can turn. And, you know, then the studio itself, there was a, you know, glass partition that they would, you know, have, and the room itself was not well lit, the recording studio, other than, you know, the place where you were reading from, and you would sit on a stool with headphones over you, and they would modulate your voice based on, you know, okay, well, where are you comfortable sitting? How far away from the microphone do you want to be? And they would move the microphone as necessary. And then they would just basically, you know, they would talk instructions into your headphones, and then you would just read as you were. And most often, unless you had difficulty pronouncing a word, was, you know, a single take.
Wow. Now, when you say you're working with these people, like, who are you specific? Did you meet like Mendelssohn or Melendez and those guys and work with them specifically, or?
Yes, both Bill Mendelssohn and Bill Melendez were people that I met. Bill Melendez obviously did the voice of several of the characters, which I was just utterly fascinated by. And I just, you know, loved watching him do his craft. And Lee Mendelssohn, you know, sort of being that, you know, the older fatherly figure man in, you know, as a young boy, just so kind and welcoming, just really, really, really lovely people to work with.
Yes, definitely. Lee Mendelssohn reminded me of my father, and they were about the same age. I think Bill Melendez was actually a little bit older. I'm not sure. Yeah, they were both. And I sat with Bill Melendez when I did my lines. He would do the other line of whoever I was supposed to be talking to.
Oh, wow. So they were really, really hands-on. That's really interesting and cool to know. They obviously must have cared about the product and cared about you guys and your performances.
Yes.
Do you guys have a favorite of the ones you've done? There is a correct answer, by the way, but go ahead. I'll let you guys tell me what your favorite is.
I definitely have a favorite. My favorite is it's the Easter Beagle, Charlie Brown, just because Snoopy with Dancing with the Bunnies. I just always thought that was so cute.
Yeah, that is a brilliant little sequence. How about you, Duncan?
Well, mine would be My Valentine, Charlie Brown, because it was my intro to the whole Charlie Brown world. And I thought it was you know, such an iconic feature that they came up with, you know, particularly the ambition of Charlie Brown thinking he's going to get so many Valentines that he has to bring two briefcases to school with him. you know, I mean, that kind of optimism, I think a lot of people can identify with that. Certainly it's something that's mirrored my own life.
Well, that's amazing. Well, you're both wrong, unfortunately. The correct answer is you're a good sport, Charlie Brown.
Oh, okay.
That's the one that always did me in as a kid. And for whatever reason, I remember my parents, like, they watched they watched Valentine's and Thanksgiving and Christmas with me. Those were like big ones, and Easter. But this was the sort of off major holiday one that they also were into when it would air. So I have good memories of that one for sure.
And this is why you're wearing a pumpkin helmet.
That is correct. That's a great Rocky moment when Charlie Brown puts on the pumpkin helmet and wins the motocross race. Do you guys feel any kind of connection with your characters? Let's say before you were doing it, obviously I'm sure you do now, but these are huge characters that you guys get to do.
I'm Indian, and probably because my sister has dark hair and I have red hair. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like she was more like Lucy, but now people ask me when I go to shows, they ask me, and my husband goes to all the local shows with me, and you know, they kind of look at him and he says, oh yeah, yeah, she's like Lucy at home. But I don't know that I didn't really talk about it much in my life. So, I mean, Duncan, you will have to answer this as well, but I kind of didn't really make a big deal about it and didn't realize that so many people had a connection to it until I started doing Comic-Cons last year. Wow. I had no idea. I never really brought it up much.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, because it's not just one generation at this point. I mean, my kids know these because that was just something I had to share with them. They're such a huge part of my life and, you know, so many's life. How about you, Duncan? How do you feel about Charlie Brown?
Well, sure. I mean, I identified with Charlie Brown early on because, I mean, you know, the social awkwardness that Charlie Brown, you know, experiences throughout his life in the strip, it mirrored my own experiences of, you know, trying to navigate my way through middle school and high school in a lot of ways. And, you know, it was one of those things where I don't think I fully appreciated how iconic it was until I realized that my own kids thought that it was pretty cool.
Oh, that's amazing.
Which, you know, that's one of the things that they're first to tell anybody that they meet, you know, about their father. And so, you know, that association, I'm very proud of that and very grateful that I got this experience.
Oh, that's just great to hear. And yeah, I mean, we all love these. They're a huge part of just American culture. So it is just absolutely great to talk to you guys about this and get to know it you a little bit. So Melanie, you mentioned the conventions. What's that been like for the year? Have you ever gone to a comic convention previous to this? Okay, so just tell me what that kind of experience was like.
Well, and I knew about it because my kids go and, you know, I just want to bring up one more thing about, you know, I had my kids watch the shows, the specials, and I would say, that's mommy talking on the TV. And they would just look at me like, you know, with big eyes. And then as they got older, you know, they started the wah, 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 wah to me whenever I told them to do something. So they got a kick out of it. I actually got to, I did a show in Vancouver, BC about a few months ago. And I asked my youngest son, he just turned 25. I asked him to be my money handler. And so he got to see what it was like. And I know he was amazed. He can be a little bit aloof sometimes. So I could see in his reactions, I could see in his eyes that, you know, he thought it was pretty cool. And he was working for the studio at the time that does the current Peanuts show. And so it was kind of cool for him to see the whole thing, but it's been amazing. And as I said previously, you know, I didn't realize until I had people constantly coming up to me and saying, I grew up with you, or my mom loves you. And I think that this is the perfect time. This has been the perfect time for me to start doing shows because it is multi-generational and I'm getting the people my age or a little bit older than me. And then their children and their children's children. I've had three generations in front of me asking questions.
That's amazing. That is absolutely amazing. Duncan, how about you? Have you've done just a few? Is this something you're just starting?
Yeah, well, Melanie contacted me last fall, sort of, you know, just to reconnect. And as she let me know what was going on, it seemed like there was an opportunity that was interesting. And I wanted to know a little bit more about it. But I also was a little suspect because it's not a world that I'm familiar with. I have never been to a comic convention before. I actually went to my first one with Melanie a couple weeks ago down in Iceland, New Jersey. And I have a couple more scheduled for this year. And you know, I'm certainly aware of, you know, how popular Peanuts characters are in general. Of course, you know, they're just iconic. But when you go to a show, I don't think I fully understood, you know, the rap attention that it attracts. And so I'm grateful that there are fans out there that keep this alive, because, you know, I think that it's an important message and voice that Peanuts put out there.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And it's unique, you know, to this day, it remains unique, which is amazing. So I have to ask you guys now, did you have any experience or any interaction with Schultz at all?
We didn't. My sister did.
Oh, yeah.
We didn't. We worked with Bill Melendez and Lee Mendelsohn solely. I just want to add something to what Duncan just said. We reunited. We saw each other face to face for the first time in 45 years. Wow. Just a few weeks ago when we did that show in New Jersey.
That's
so amazing. That was pretty cool.
That's very cool. Now, did you want to give him psychiatric help?
Oh yes, lots of psychiatric help. In fact, we keep in touch a lot, you know, over Messenger, you know, just kind of letting each other know what's going on. And I always give him advice.
Oh, good. And do you charge 5 cents?
Yes, nice. I do.
But I'm getting much more value than the 5 cents.
Nice. Well, listen, guys, before you picked a few strips that we're going to go over and just talk about what makes them cool. But before we get to that part, can you tell us, you know, kind of what you're up to today, how people can find you and where you might be at next?
Duncan?
Well, so where I am now, I live in Southwest New Hampshire. I've been working for the city of Keene for 30 years as of June 11th. I originally started off when I moved from California to New Hampshire during my sophomore year of high school. My dad had gone to Dartmouth College, and my family bought a restaurant, and I started working in the restaurant business. And I went to undergraduate school at the University of New Hampshire, got a hotel administration degree, and was shipped off to Texas to work for Hyatt Hotels for a few years. And then death in my family brought me back to New Hampshire to run the business for a little while. After that, I was in between things, but I recognized that the hotel business really wasn't where I felt like my heart was. So I went back to graduate school and got an environmental science degree, and luckily was able to be employed right out of graduate school working for the city of Keene, working in recycling and solid waste management, as well as work in the highway division and the fleet division, which, you know, just is part of operating a small municipality in Southwest New Hampshire. And I just absolutely love it here. Where I live, but I also like now venturing off and connecting with Peanuts fans.
It is so incredible right. That you're in Keene, New Hampshire, because that is one of our favorite places. Michael, right? Correct. We talked about this a little bit before.
Well, we used to hang out at the recycle center. That's where all the hip folk met.
How long did you live in Keene, Michael?
Well, Keene and Marlboro, 20 years.
Marlboro, yeah. Michael wrote a stage musical for my comic book, Amelia Rules, and the girl who played Amelia was from Keene, right?
Yeah.
And there you go. So Keene is nifty. Melanie, how about you?
Well, I left California around 1994. And I've lived in several places. I've worked mostly in the medical field. I raised three boys who are now young men, and they all work in visual effects in Vancouver, BC. And a little bit later in life, I got into radio. I've been on air back in my 20s, but I went back into it in the marketing department, and I always asked my clients if they wanted a male or female voice. And if they wanted a female voice, I said, well, what do you think if I do it? So I did a lot of radio ads, which was fun. And then I started doing this. COVID kind of changed everything. I was trying to figure out what I could do where I wasn't working for somebody else and, you know, kind of semi-retired, so to speak. So this kind of fell in my lap when somebody contacted me last year and asked if they could buy 50 of my autographs. I'm like, yeah, sure. Yeah. You know, they got me hooked up with somebody else that got me into my first convention. And then I just took it from there. I just did what I did in radio, where I just contacted places, and if it was a no, then I didn't take it personally. I just moved on, and I've gotten more yeses than I have no's, to be honest. And, you know, as Duncan said, I got a hold of him probably the end of last year, and we've got a few. Duncan isn't doing quite as much as I am because he's still working full time, as he said. And congratulations on your 30 years, by the way.
That's impressive.
That's awesome. And we are going to be doing Granite State Comic-Con in September in New Hampshire. I just thought I'd mention that. We've got a couple before then, and after. I think we have one before and one after. So that's going to be kind of cool.
That's in Manchester, right?
Yeah, yes. And they're very excited about having Duncan there. They didn't realize that, you know, there was a Charlie Brown that came from New Hampshire. So.
Right, yeah.
That's a big deal. That's amazing.
Yeah. So I've been, I've been doing this for... I started last year, and then there was quite a bit of time, about 6 months, where I didn't do anything. I did go sign at the Charles Schulz Museum in Santa Rosa. I did that last August.
Oh, tell us about that a little bit, because I've been there. I was the artist in residence for a week. Isn't that the most magical place in the world?
Oh, yeah. The people were lined up out the door. I was only signing. I was only supposed to sign, I believe it was for an hour, and an hour went by and there were still people in line, and I said, I'll keep going. That's fine. Cause they had the coloring book, you know, black and white coloring book things for me to sign, and then people could take them and color them or just keep them. Mm-hmm. And, there were so many people there. It was really cool. And then I just started getting a hold of places all over the country. I haven't been out of the country yet, except for Vancouver, BC, and just, you know, just flying around or driving around Texas. And I do list my events on my Facebook page. It's at Melanie J. Cohn, and that's K-O-H-N. And as they come up, as they're promoted, I list them. I don't list them before they're promoted because sometimes the promoters don't like that.
Oh, this is great. Now, Harold, do you have anything else before we switch to discussing the strips?
I just had one question. Is there any one question that you got at a convention that stands out to you, that you remember someone was asking or saying to you, or a comment that they made that stood out to you guys?
Not really. I think mostly, you know, people will come up and they'll have quotes, and mm-hmm. a lot of times I'll say, "Oh, thank you. I think I'll use that." I tend to put a quote on my 8x10s when I sign them because my signature is ugly. And I don't think they're getting their money's worth with my signature. So I'll put quotes on there, and you know, sometimes somebody will have a quote that I've forgotten. So I'll say, "Hey, I think I'm going to use that." But mostly I do get questions, but most of the time it's people telling me something. They want me to know that they grew up with me. Yeah. You know, they say with you, but you know, they grew up with Peanuts, watching Peanuts, reading Peanuts. Yeah. So it's mostly that they want to tell me something more than ask me something.
Right. That's the connection point.
Yeah. And it's an amazing thing because, you know, it's still a relatively new thing that you could even do that you can walk up to someone that's, you know, that they have these conventions and there's people that you admire and like, and you can actually just walk up and have a conversation with them. It's a really kind of special thing.
It is. Yeah. And thank you for doing that. I mean, that's just really, being a fan, I understand what that connection is and what that means, to be able to just get a little closer to something that means so much to you, and that you're an ambassador for that is really, really great. And I'm grateful.
And it is a thing, you know, I really didn't realize, like Duncan and I both said, that we hadn't been to any cons ourselves. And I think the most amazing thing to me is that people are really into the voice actors and they want selfies. And I find that kind of interesting because we are, you know, we're older, we're both, you know, pushing 60 years old, and we're, you know, we're asked to have, you know, people want their pictures taken with us for something that we did so long ago and that they can relate to. And I just think that's really cool.
It's like you're letting them reveal a secret behind something to their friends, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
hey,
these are the people that did this amazing thing.
Well, it's a connection point, right? I mean, I didn't fully understand, you know, why people would come to a, you know, a convention to see either, you know, to see me, really, is really what I guess I'm getting at. I mean, I'm not going to speak for Melanie in that case, but I started to understand, you know, because there's things that I'm fans of, you know, specifically, like, you know, I'll give you an example. Like, I'm a huge Peter Frampton fan.
All right.
And, you know, if Peter Frampton were to show up somewhere around here, I would 100% go to wherever that was to connect with him, because I just think he's an amazing artist and his music has just impacted my life so deeply. And so I'm just a huge Peter Frampton fan. And so I get that relationship happens with people with Peanuts.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that enthusiasm that Duncan just showed, that's what we get at the conventions. That's what people come up and say, "Oh my gosh. Oh, that, you know, this is awesome." You know, and they want our autograph. They want a selfie because the Peanuts voices, the characters, have made such a huge impact on their lives.
Right, right. It reminds me of a joke in our own family. My wife, who's a big fan of British Rock Beatles, I mean, actually, so are Michael and Jimmy. But she's been to a lot of events where she's actually gotten to meet the artists, the musical artists. And she said that it's like, I don't know why guys do this, but it's always guys. They'll just kind of start pointing the finger at the star and go, "I saw you in 1973 at the Port Chester Capitol Theater." It's always that they're saying, "Hey, I know you.
I know you. Yeah.
I know you."
And also, people are like, they'll say that. They'll say, oh, my mom loves you, or I grew up with you. And I've had people cry. I've had people so nervous that they can't talk.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, it's really interesting to see how, you know, and I know too, because I'm a fan of some things, that I would be the same way.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's great. And that's great that you recognize that, and that you guys, you know, get something in return for it. It's really wonderful. And it's wonderful that you both agreed to be on our podcast. I cannot tell you how much it means to me. Because I'm one of those people that have those voices in my head. Like, for instance, now that I'm an older man with less worries about, let's say, you know, how much hair I have, I often think of that joke of, besides, I don't have that much hair to cut at the end of You're a Good Sport, Charlie Brown, where that's what he wins is the haircuts. I think of that, you know, twice a week.
Well, I know this is going to crush you, Jimmy, but I have only seen You're a Good Sport, Charlie Brown once.
Oh, no, really?
Yeah.
That's like finding Dylan. I don't really like that song, man.
It's not that I don't like it. It's not that I don't like it. It's just not one of those ones that, you know,
I'm sorry. It is one of those ones.
That one's hard to access, right?
Well, which one is your favorite? You said it was the first one you did was Valentine's Day.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, you know, what I do also, I really did like Race for Your Life, Charlie Brown, because of being the first feature length
movie
that Peanuts did. I was down in Miami, Florida visiting my aunt and uncle. And that's when it hit the theaters. And I remember going to the theater, you know, which, you know, was back in those days. This is, you know, in the days of Star Wars, you know, yeah. and those big features. And, you know, sitting in the air conditioned movie theater and, you know, hearing my voice, which was not far removed from where I was at the time, because this is when I was like 14 years old when, you know, shortly after it came out. So.
And that movie, I mean, that sold out Radio City Music Hall. Like,
yeah. And it was the same year as Star Wars, wasn't it?
77. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I have the same memory of that being a big deal because, you know, back then everything went to the theaters first.
Right.
Although I will say that one of the things that, I mean, and Melanie at least will understand this, was that I think the biggest thrill of the time, you know, when I started recognizing that this was a bigger thing than I was giving it credit for, was when my name appeared in the TV guide.
Oh yeah.
And the newspaper.
Yeah. I mean, those TV guy, that is ubiquitous. That was like the most read thing in America. That's when you know you made it, I would imagine, in 20th century America for sure.
And I still have copies because my grandma would mark, she put a little mark by my name and send it to me. So I still have, and I actually take them to the cons and show people the old TV guide, and also I have a script from the bread commercials, which have the little, you know, showing the little TV screen and what's going to be on when I'm saying a certain line.
Oh, that's cool. Well, guys, this has been fantastic. Thank you so much for being on our show. How about we just take a quick break now and then come back and we discuss some of your favorite strips.
And I have a bit of trivia for you that I only found out about very recently, which I'll share with you.
Oh, fantastic. It's a cliffhanger. So now you guys got to come back from the other side of the break. All right.
I just want to take a moment to remind you that all three hosts are cartoonists themselves, and their work is available for sale. You can find links to purchase books by Jimmy, Harold, and Michael on our website. You can also support the show on Patreon or buy us a mud pie. Check out the store link on unpackingpeanuts.com.
All right, we're back. I could barely make it through the break. Duncan, what is the piece of trivia that you got for us?
About a month ago, I found out that I voiced the character Franklin in You're a Good Sport.
Are you serious? And you didn't know? How did that happen?
I had no idea.
I informed him because I found out that I voiced Loretta in You're a Good Sport, Charlie Brown. And I saw that I was credited for Loretta and Duncan was credited for Franklin in that one show.
Oh, that is amazing. And you had no idea. Now, look at a side note, were you paid for that?
No. And that's really okay.
All right. If you're okay with it, I'll let it go too.
Yeah. I don't think we're paid for it because we would have known, because we would have been getting residuals, which we still do, by the way, get residuals. As small
fantastic.
As they are, we still get them.
That's great. That is great.
Yeah.
You don't know whether to cash them or frame them, right?
Oh, I wouldn't care. Or, for 2 cents, I'd cash it.
Or if you, I guess you can, you can, you could probably sell the checks to your fans for more than you get to cash them.
This authentic residual check. All right. So how about we go through, we're going to do three of Duncan's picks for favorite comics, favorite Peanuts comics, discuss them. And then we're going to do three of Melanie's. December 7th, 1969. Charlie Brown and Linus are outside on a beautiful blue spring-like day. Linus looks a little upset. They're both carrying their school books. They walk for a little bit. Finally, Charlie Brown notices that Linus is upset, and Charlie Brown asks,
"What's the matter?"
Linus says, "What would happen if I decided not to go to school today? I mean, would it really matter? Would one day make that much difference in my life? Would anyone really care? What if I just turned around right here and didn't go to school today?" And Charlie Brown says,
"You'd waste a good lunch."
Linus sighs. Well, that basically is my philosophy, Duncan. I know, like, lunch is basically the highlight of the day. So I agree with Charlie Brown on that one.
Yeah, you know, I'm a fan of breakfast, lunch, and dinner. I'm just very, I mean, the reason I picked this strip was that, you know, I'm a very food centric person, and I do plan, you know, like I like to travel to eat.
Oh, really?
I'm just a big fan of food, in particular Mexican food. But I've always been very focused on food. I'm very interested in. I'm actually a pretty decent cook. My family owned a restaurant for a number of years. So food is, you know, I mean, it's food is community, really. You know, it's food is what you do when you sit down and gather and talk about your day, and, you know, and then also taste, you know, exquisite things, hopefully.
Well, absolutely. I couldn't agree with that more. I would say too, as far as a little piece of cartooning here, my highlight is looking at the little lunch sacks that Schultz drew. You know, somehow they look exactly like little paper lunch bags, even though they're only made of three lines.
Well, and then they're probably pretty accurate. I mean, I remember having, you know, bringing my sack lunch to school every day at this time, you know, the times that I was doing the voice recordings, and, you know, it was my egg salad or my bologna and maybe one of those, if it was a really great day, it would have one of those little cheese and crackers things that you peel back the cover.
Yeah.
And you had the four saltines and then the processed cheese with the little plastic spoon.
Yeah, the little red rectangle that you'd smear that cheese on. Oh, that was good.
Yep.
That was good stuff. Yep. Sometimes you could trade for that if you had something good. That was
That's
nice.
Right. That's right.
We got to eat Zingers only because they had the, you know, the peanuts on them, the peanuts characters on them.
So there was a perk.
September 22nd, 1957. Charlie Brown and Lucy are outside. Charlie Brown looks furious. Lucy is sitting, holding a football, waiting for Charlie Brown to kick it. Charlie Brown says,
"No, absolutely not. You must think I'm crazy. You say you'll hold the ball, but you won't. You'll pull it away and I'll break my neck."
"Why, Charlie Brown, how you talk. I wouldn't think of such a thing. I'm a changed person. Look, isn't this a face you can trust?"
"All right, you hold the ball and I'll come running up and kick it."
Charlie Brown does just that. Unfortunately,
she did it again!
Whump. Charlie Brown lands flat on his back.
"I admire you, Charlie Brown. You have such faith in human nature."
Yay! Well, that made my day. That is so cool. Oh, well, tell us about this one, Duncan. I mean, obviously, this is a classic Peanuts scenario here.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's. I mean, obviously, you know, it's one of the most iconic things between Charlie Brown and Lucy. And, you know, I mean, you got to give Charlie Brown some credit. I mean, you know, the guy has had how many experiences of football being pulled away, and yet he thinks, well, maybe this time. And, you know, so I just love the fact that, you know, that Charlie Brown is always the guy who will pick himself up, dust himself off, and give it another try.
Yep.
I don't ever want to lose that aspect of, you know, how I view life.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Because, you know, it's thought of, oh, well, Charlie Brown's the loser, but it's partly because Charlie Brown will constantly put himself out there. You know, he's willing to risk failure, which is actually a big secret to life, is being willing to risk failure. I admire that too.
Right. Well, Charlie Brown's the ultimate optimist.
Yes, I would agree with that.
And if Charlie Brown ever got to kick the football, then he wouldn't be Charlie Brown.
Right, right, right. Now, here's a question. We had a guest on a few weeks ago, William Pepper, and he hosts a podcast called It's Podcast Charlie Brown. And it's a great podcast. And he was talking about Lucy, he thinks, ultimately has Charlie Brown's best interests at heart. That he believes that maybe she's just trying to make him better somehow. What do you guys think about that?
I really don't know about that. I mean, I think that the person who you're talking about probably has more knowledge or has read more strips than I have.
Yeah, but you got to be Lucy, so he's wrong if you disagree. That trumps reading strips.
Okay, well, if my opinion matters, then yes. No.
All right. No. Well, yeah, your opinion matters. All right.
You're, well, so, then sorry, Lucy, she's just a bully.
You know what, though? She's great at it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But I would say that, you know, Lucy definitely keeps it real. I mean, yes. I mean, Lucy's unquestionably a bully. But I think that, you know, I think it's a circumstantial thing that, you know, that, you know, if the chips were down, that you could probably rely on Lucy, but, you know, on the day-to-day basis, she's going to try to get you.
I agree with that, with the chips are down, though. Yeah. I think in the right scenario, Lucy's the one you want by your side.
Yeah.
Well, she's definitely a take action kind of girl.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. I'll agree with that.
August 11th, 1974. So we see it is the top of Snoopy's doghouse, only there's a curtain above it. And we see a sign underneath reading Paw Pet Show Today, now playing in the beginning. Snoopy comes out in a little usher's hat. And we see that it is the beginning of Act 3. In the next panel, we see Snoopy acting out the Old Testament, it seems, using hand puppets. Charlie Brown says,
"Have you ever seen the entire Old Testament performed by puppets before?"
Lucy answers,
"No, I can't say that I have."
"Perhaps I should warn you about this next scene."
"What next scene?"
Snoopy takes a bucket filled with water and dumps it over Lucy's head.
"The parting of the Red Sea."
I like that Snoopy is already on to the next scene, which I am not sure exactly what's going on there. I think it's two cavemen and possibly a wolf man. Let's Lucy sit there just soaking wet.
Oh, the reason that this particular one was chosen was because they did a variation of this exact thing in Be My Valentine, Charlie Brown.
Oh, yes, that's right. That's right. And there's a few of these he does during the run of the strip. He has Snoopy acting out Jaws at one point, which I remember being very funny.
Right. And the tables are turned just for a moment.
That's right. That's right. Lucy finally gets some comeuppance here.
And I just want to say one thing.
Yeah.
That just reminded me of. So I don't know if you know or your listeners are aware that Charles Schulz did what Charles Schulz wanted to do.
Right.
And he never, you know, it ultimately never had a problem with it. Although he was advised not to put parables in the strips, you know, or in the shows, you know, Linus, of course, in the very first special, the Christmas special, was reciting parables. He was told not to create a black character.
Right.
So, you know, he did what he wanted to do. And this is, I believe, one of the reasons why it was so iconic. Why it is so iconic is that he did what he felt and what he wanted. And, you know, there obviously wasn't a big enough backlash because, you know, he succeeded completely.
Yeah. There's an integrity to what he did that I think really he built up with his audience where they respected him for who he was and what he was doing with the strip, that it seemed just an integral part of what Peanuts was all about because it reflected him as an artist.
Yes.
Yeah. And you know, the other thing he never loses sight of is that it's always a good comic strip. It's never about, I have to preach this message. I have to get over this thought first. You know, I think it's always about the first thing that's important to me is this has to just be a really good comic strip that anyone can read. And once he has that sort of ticked off, he then somehow allows all of his own personal stuff into the strip. And that is what makes it, you know, the strip and the shows. And it just makes it, it makes it a work of art as opposed to just a piece of, you know, commercial, just another commercial cartoon. It, it really is special.
Yeah.
I mean, thank goodness for humor. I mean, you know, humor smooths a lot of rough edges.
Oh, 1,000%. And especially this type of humor, you know, it's gentle isn't the right word because I mean, sometimes it can get pretty pointed with Lucy or Violet or some of those characters, but there's something about the humor that really does make it seem like a world that you want to spend time in, you know?
There's a dignity to it that he gives all of the characters, which I think is unique. Not a lot of artists can do that to every character that he has, that they pretty much have, there's something to them that you have to respect, because he's baked it in. Even if Lucy's rough with somebody, right? Or even if Charlie Brown is, seems to be a failure, we're not laughing at their failures. We're not celebrating the bullying, but at the same time, we really respect these characters. They have this integrity that's built in because of who Schultz is and what he's doing with them.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, isn't it really part of our everyday existence? I mean, this is our lot. These are our lives that are being portrayed in comic strips.
Yeah. There's an authenticity to it for sure.
100%. March 30th, 1993. We see Charlie Brown arriving home. Uncharacteristically, he looks very excited. As a matter of fact, he's doing cartwheels and dances and tumbled sets. And finally, he yells to his sister,
I hit a home run in the ninth inning and we won. I was the hero.
Sally says, you? All right, why'd you pick that one?
Well, because I mean, isn't that, you know, like, you know, the everybody, there's always somebody out there who's willing to cut you off at the knees and bring you back down to earth. And I think that's not a bad thing all the time, but sometimes we need to be able to celebrate our wins.
Yes. Amen to that. 100%.
Yeah. That's something I always have to remember is to, if someone's celebrating, celebrate with them, right?
Exactly.
Yes. Join in.
Yes.
Exactly. And spoiler alerts for people as we read these in the future. If you want your Peanuts happy ending, that's the strip to stop with. Because there's a twist to this in the next year. But in this moment, it is fantastic to see Charlie Brown just so happy. And how about those little drawings? Every one of those drawings of Charlie Brown, I think, is adorable. And this is well into his career. You know, he's at 40 years into the strip at this point.
Yeah, he's got his moves down. I mean, you know, don't we all have our happy dance?
Yeah, my favorite is either the third one where he's doing the little kick or possibly the next to last one where he's just spinning on his head.
Well, I mean, it's one of the, I mean, you know, more often than not, the person that you get to see expressing unbridled joy is Snoopy, you know, with his little Snoopy dance. And it's not that often you get to see Charlie Brown really, truly, genuinely happy. And it's a moment to celebrate.
He's earned that in the strip, right? That makes it all the more powerful when it actually happens.
Yeah. And by the think about this, if this strip is run in 1958, it kind of ruins the strip. Right. Because it's, you know, we don't know this at the time, but we have, you know, 40 some years to go. But having it happen in the 90s or the early 1990, it is a joy. It's exciting. It's a thrill. And, you know, you feel it because you've suffered along with Charlie Brown, all those defeats. It's great to see. And
Sally's reaction is totally normal. I mean, she's like, what, you?
Right. That can't be right. I'll tell a real quick story. My dad, and this sounds sad, but it's okay. Ultimately, he would want to laugh at it. He had dementia at the end. And the one thing, he was a very big baseball fan, a Pirates fan, Pittsburgh Pirates fan, which he passed on to me. And I was visiting him and he was saying these things that didn't really make a whole lot of sense. And then he kind of caught himself. And he realized he wasn't making sense. So he stopped and he said, so what else is going on? And I said, well, the Pirates, this was in 2015, the Pirates are in first place. And he looked at me and he said, that can't be right. I may be out of it, kid, but I'm pretty sure the Pirates aren't in first place. But they were that week anyway. All right, Melanie, how about we do some of your strips?
Okay.
March 27th. 1959. Lucy is sitting at her classic psychiatric stand, a little different because this is the first time we've ever seen it. But she is sitting there and the sign says, psychiatric help, 5 cents. Charlie Brown walks up and says,
I have deep feelings of depression. What can I do about this?
Lucy looks away in deep thought.
Snap out of it. 5 cents, please.
Charlie Brown looks chagrined. That's the face we have described as chagrined for all these trips.
No, yeah, I stand corrected, because that exact exchange there really did capture Lucy for me.
So now, why did you pick this one for us, Melanie? Obviously, it's iconic.
Well, and it stood out to me because where's the rest of the booth? She's like sitting at a table.
Yeah, Michael, it's how long is it before the psychiatric booth shows up again after this?
Like a year and a half.
Isn't that, yes. So he draws this one this way. And he has drawn these types of booths like really early in the strip where kids are selling like lemonade or whatever.
Mud pies.
Mm-hmm. Mud pies, right. And for whatever reason, he decides to add that sign for the next one. But it is like well over a year before he comes back to the psychiatric stand, which is crazy, I think.
I think that's interesting. I just think that Lucy is, she's not there to give actual advice to people. She's there to make it all about herself. And, she wants it to be over. I think she wants her 5 cents and she doesn't want to actually sit there and help people. So, you know, that's her solution. Just snap out of it and pay me.
When we talked about this strip in our regular recording session, I said, this is like a parody of therapy by someone who has never gone to therapy. So it's completely wrong, but it's kind of completely right too.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
And if we're only so simple.
Exactly. Oh, just yeah. Snap out of it. There you go.
Why didn't I think of that?
Why didn't I?
Worth every nickel.
This is a great one. This is a moment that's exciting because a lot of, you know, we're going year by year. And right now we just finished recording 1961. So we haven't seen rerun yet. But here in this pick, we have an appearance of Lucy's younger brother, younger than Linus even, rerun. So March 26th, 1973. Lucy and rerun are inside. Rerun has obviously been sitting there playing with some blocks. Lucy reaches out her hand and says to Rerun,
come on, Rerun, I'm going to take you for a little walk. It's about time you got a look at the outside world. Well, what do you think?
Rerun thinks to himself, you mean this is it? I love Rerun. We haven't seen Rerun yet, but I love Rerun. He eventually takes over the strip in the 90s. He becomes like the star. So it's nice to see a little early Rerun.
Yeah, he had his first mention in 72. He was born May 23rd, 1972. So he is 50 years old.
Yeah, he's my age. 50.
So when I catch the birthdays, I try to put it on my Facebook. So I had a thing on May 23rd, a happy birthday, happy 50th to Rerun.
What do you think Rerun's doing at the day? I hope he achieved his goal. He wanted to be an underground cartoonist. So I hope he made that.
So this Rerun actually predates Fred Rerun Barry from What's Happening, what we're saying.
Yes.
Okay.
Unless Fred Barry was going by Rerun in some sort of stage name previous to the show. Mm. Yes.
We'll have to learn a little more about that.
That's for our other podcast. Hey, what was happening?
Yes. And just a little trivia, he was voiced by Lee Mendelsohn's son, one of his sons, back in the 80s.
Oh, really? Oh, I actually have pretty strong memories of those. That was probably from the Charlie Brown Snoopy show. And they animated a bunch of reruns on the back of his mom's bikes strips, which were always one of my favorites. Now, considering I don't do anything, I lead a very active life. I think about that all the time. That is that is the mantra of a cartoonist.
Right.
All right. April 28th, 1961. Lucy and Linus are sitting in a lounge chair in their living room. Lucy says,
you can't drift along forever. You have to direct your thinking. For instance, you have to decide whether you're going to be a liberal or a conservative. You have to take some sort of stand. You have to associate yourself with some sort of cause.
Linus says,
"Are there any openings in the lunatic fringe?"
That's the voice I always heard for Linus.
That is your inner voice of Linus. Nailed it.
Yeah. The one thing I always remember from the specials that just goes over and over and over in my head is from the Christmas special where he goes, "I can't memorize these lines."
Now, I want to ask you guys a question about that. When you would hear them back, you know, you did these however many, 6 months previous, a year previous. Were you ever shocked at the versions they used, the takes they used? Were you ever, was there anything you were particularly like, yeah, I nailed it with that one?
Actually, I've been asked the opposite, and I definitely have. Well, somebody asked me, what was your least favorite line? And I have a least favorite word because my father was from New York and my mother was from Chicago. So growing up in California, I didn't think I had an accent. Right. So, but I did say certain words a certain way. And one of the things that I noticed in the Easter special was I said candy. And I always have said candy. I have a hard time saying candy. So that was one thing that kind of made me cringe. And my mom kind of teased me about it. She said, "Oh, listen to the way you said that. You didn't say it properly." Well, I must have said it properly because Bill Melendez didn't have me do it over. So.
Right. If Bill thinks it's right, it's right.
It's got the right sound.
Yes, exactly.
Did you have any other siblings, Melanie, other than your sister?
No, not at the time. I do now. I mean, as of 31 years ago, I do have another sister. But at the time, no, it was just the two of us.
What's your thoughts as the voice of Lucy toward Linus?
I think that, you know, maybe for me, it was, you know, I didn't get to be a big sister in real life. I was the one that was always picked on. And, you know, I didn't have a say in anything growing up. So I guess, you know, that's one thing that I kind of liked about being able to, you know, pretend to be bossy.
That's why I started this podcast, so I could be bossy to these people.
Yeah.
April 28th, 1961. Here we have Linus and Lucy standing outside. Linus is speaking. Lucy is rolling her eyes skyward. Linus says,
"I don't understand what you're so worried about. Why should you care if I have any opinions or personality or character?"
"Because if you don't have any character, it's a reflection on me."
Linus says,
"Aha!"
Once again, it's all about Lucy.
Yeah, she's shown her hand here, right?
Yeah.
Now, here's the question. Is Linus leading her into a trap, or is he just happy that he notices the weakness?
I think it's, I interpret it as he's happy that he notices, you know, it's like he caught her.
Finally.
He caught her on it. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the mysteries of life is now revealed.
Yes.
But now we have a new mystery, because what happened to Linus's eyebrow in the third panel has disappeared.
Uh-oh.
So now we have to figure that. Every once in a while, there's something strange happens, either because when they were reproducing it, the negative, something got wiped off or erased, or someone in a production facility tried to put a line in, and it just always stands out to lunatics like us. But, well, listen, guys, this has been beyond exciting for me. It was so kind of you both to take your time and talk to us today. And I know our listeners are absolutely going to love this episode. Before we let you go, is there anything else you want to leave us with? Any place you want to direct people again, or anything like that?
Well, I think that I've come to the understanding over, you know, years of sort of following Peanuts, but recognizing that it's going to transcend generations. I mean,
yeah.
You know, if I ever get grandchildren, I suspect that they'll at least be aware of Peanuts and Peanuts characters, and that I'll still be cool.
100%.
Likewise, my children, if you're listening out there, if I ever get grandchildren, I hope for the same. I look forward to watching Peanuts with my future grandchildren. In the meantime, please keep an eye on my Facebook. It's @Melanie J-K-O-H-N is my last name. And I do put my events on there, as I said at the beginning, as I'm able to, as they're promoted. Duncan and I will be appearing together at, I think we've got three set up where we'll be appearing together. Just keep an eye, as I said, on my Facebook page, and hopefully we'll have some more in for next year that we'll be doing together. We also do other things besides Comic Cons, so keep an eye for those events.
We absolutely will. Thank you again. This just was really special for me and for the guys. And
yes, thank you so much.
Very grateful for it. And to you guys listening out there, if you want to follow us, if you're new to the podcast, you can go back now and listen to our other episodes. We read every single Peanut strip from 1950 all the way up to 2000. We discuss some of our favorites and discuss every year in depth every week here in Unpacking Peanuts. On social media, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Unpack Peanuts. And you can also go to unpackingpeanuts.com, where there's transcripts and you can vote on your favorite strip of the year and all kinds of good stuff. So we'll be back next week with a regular episode. Until then, for Michael and Harold, I'm Jimmy. Be of good cheer.
Yes, be of good cheer.
Thanks, guys. A lot of fun.
Thank you.
Unpacking Peanuts is copyright Jimmy Gownley, Michael Cohen, and Harold Buchholz. Produced by Liz Sumner. Music by Michael Cohen. Additional voiceover by Aziza Shakrala Clark. For more from the show, follow Unpack Peanuts on Instagram and Twitter. For more about Jimmy, Michael, and Harold, visit unpackingpeanuts.com. Have a wonderful day, and thanks for listening.
She did it again!